and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design here on WTCM News Talk 580. And yes, he is in, Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Ron Jolly, on 12/16/21. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you. Thank you for all you listeners. We certainly appreciate the wonderful comments we've been getting. And some of you have been visiting, too, with some complex situations, which we always appreciate. So your trust in us, your confidence in us is much appreciated as we look back on 2021, almost saying goodbye here, 12/16, after all. Crazy, huh, Ron?
Remember a year ago, we were like, good riddance, 2020.
Yes. In 2021.
it was a little bit better.
Yeah.
No, it was much better.
Yes. Well, thank you for listening. And we have with us this morning, Heidi Thompson.
Good morning.
Our managing executive. Retirement Income Certified Professional. Great to have you back.
Thank you.
Excellent. As well as Shay Pataja.
Wait a minute, Shay.
Shay, over there in the corner.
I didn't know you were going to talk. Okay.
Hello. I'm in the PAC section.
She's going to do the stats and include any clarifications if us techies get too much in the weeds.
Mm-hmm. I'll bring you back.
Thank you. And joining us today, Courtney Danbrook. Well, welcome, Courtney Danbrook.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's great to have you here with the firm of Danbrook Adams Raymond.
You got it.
Right here in Traverse City, Michigan. And you've had quite a few years in the estate planning industry with as an attorney.
Absolutely.
Appreciate having you here. And we're going to be talking about durable powers of attorney for healthcare as well as, for financial issues. Because as Heidi and I were attending the last class with Ed Slott and Company, oh my gosh, the
Back
question.
Back in October. Yeah.
In October, so long ago. there were so many questions from the advisors from around the nation about these powers of attorney.
That's true. And also, Dennis and I have been getting, over the last couple of years, more and more questions about powers of attorney. Do people need them? How do you get one? What should it say? All those things. So we thought, hey, let's get an expert who can help us sort of make our way through some of those questions.
And we appreciate it very much, Courtney. Now, Courtney represents individuals, families, and businesses in the areas of estate and wealth succession planning, including family cottage succession and legacy asset planning. She also provides guidance and counsel for banks, trust companies, and individual fiduciaries in all aspects of trust and probate administration and litigation matters. Yeah, I guess we could say you've had a lot of experience.
Well, I don't know. You made me sound more important than I really am.
Well, that's my goal. Courtney's thoughtful and thorough approach puts clients at ease, and I would say that for us as well.
Yes, indeed.
You've served us well. Thank you, Courtney, for coming on with us. So we're talking today about benefits and dangers of powers of attorney. And this is direct from Shannon Evans, a presenter at the Ed Slott & Company conference. And so we've had a lot of questions generated from this, but we've got it printed here. And what we want to talk about in the very beginning of this is if you could just share with us, Courtney, what is a durable power of attorney and why should one consider having it? The basics to start, if you would.
Absolutely. I always boil it down to think about all those things that we take for granted on a daily basis, business and financial related, that we walk around every day, conduct business in ourselves, and what happens in the event that we are not able to do that, whether it's incapacity, whether it's a number of things. But when that trigger happens, we need somebody to be able to do all of those things, again, that we take for granted. So financial power of attorney is that instrument that will do that for you.
If we become disabled, and I've heard it said, and I think it's pretty accurate as a stat, our chances of becoming disabled or having some kind of medical issue are much greater than our death. So it goes without saying, it should be one of the first documents we get done from an estate planning standpoint, yes?
Absolutely. And not only in those instances where we may become incapacitated or where we're no longer competent to be able to do those business and financial matters, sometimes financial powers of attorney are used just simply from an ease of administration standpoint. It may be that you're traveling or you're out of state and you need something done at your bank or anywhere else, and you just aren't able to do that. Having that comprehensive financial power of attorney will take care of that for you.
Well, that is a great point. So if there's something that needs to happen, either with the bank or your IRA custodian, whatever that might be, those kinds of situations could make it very easy to have handled if you've got the properly executed power of attorney. So a power of attorney, I looked up the definition just so I could cheat here and read it. A power of attorney means the authority to act for another person in specified or all legal and financial matters. Pretty good definition.
I'd say you're now a legal professional, aren't you, Dennis?
Working on it. Yeah. Dennis Prout Esquire.
Yeah, there you are. So the durable power of attorney allows one to have another act in their interest for various financial and could be health matters as well. We're going to talk about the financial issues first. So the mechanics, how does this work? How does it work in terms of getting this set up?
So usually, again, it goes along with an execution of a separate instrument, a durable power of attorney for financial and business matters. And when we specifically say financial and business, that can be very broad and encompassing. But the first thing to think about is who, in fact, would you put in that position to be that person who's going to stand in your shoes?
If you're married, generally a spouse first, right?
Yes.
Generally.
Better be. I think I trust her, or she thinks she trusts
me. I take them into separate rooms and I say, are you under duress at all?
But Courtney, this
just with me now.
This is something that you really want to think through, though. You want to be careful about who you name because you're actually giving them power to act in your name. So
yes, absolutely. As we say, it is a extremely comprehensive document. The idea is because we do want to have that ease of administration, we want to be able to have somebody, no matter what that issue is, be able to stand in our shoes. But along with that goes a lot of power and authority that we're granting to that individual. And the idea is we can avoid a conservatorship because we already have somebody who granted all that authority to. But there's always that balancing act. How much do we grant them? And again, making sure that that is somebody that you trust unequivocally.
So it may not always be someone in your family, right?
Correct.
You could pick somebody outside your family.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Ron Jolly, yes, sir.
Does it last beyond if somebody dies and, say, the spouse in this case has powers of attorney after the death?
Great question. I call it a lifetime document. It is only valid during your lifetime. Okay. As soon as you pass, that document goes away.
So it's a life-only document, and a lot of people don't know that, right?
Correct.
It's like they think, well, this goes on, you know, and they can handle the same stuff, you know, if I'm here or gone.
Nope.
Not. So it cuts at death.
Correct.
It's all done.
Yep.
All right. When should one use a durable power of attorney, generally, for the finance?
Generally, again, you guys come across it, I'm sure, a lot in your business. It is typically, I would tell you, the case is if we're able to walk around and do our own business, then we're going to be doing that. When it really becomes crucial is when we are starting to have some competency, cognitive issues. Somebody else may notice that, hey, there's something slipping there. And having that document in place, again, we avoid having to go to probate court to get a conservator in those situations. So typically you'll see it used in those situations where we have a cognitive issue or starting to have a cognitive issue, and we want to make sure that if someone is no longer competent to be doing those business and financial related affairs, that we've got somebody who can.
Who makes that decision that someone is incompetent or should have that power of attorney, in fact, in force?
That's why it's so important the document that is executed anticipates that and would call out a mechanism to be able to determine when is that person no longer competent. And usually that trigger is valuation and a certification by a physician.
By a physician. Now, will a physician, a general physician, normally do that?
We used to all the time go to primary care physicians because they would know that individual. We still direct to go to that primary care physician because they do know that individual. More and more, we're seeing that primary care physicians are kicking that out to a more specialized individual to do an evaluation, such as a neurologist.
So they refer it to someone with perhaps special experience in that area or specialized experience.
Correct.
If you will.
Yep.
So, Dennis, this might be a good time to mention, because before the show, when we were talking about this, there is something called a springing power of attorney, and that sort of got into that getting the doctor to say whether you're competent or not. And what is a springing power of attorney, Courtney?
Sure. That is a fancy word for a trigger of okay. when that document will actually become in place, or when that individual who you appoint will actually be able to start acting. And that springing portion, the trigger, is usually the doctor's certification that you are no longer competent to be able to manage your financial and business-related matters. So it would not become in effect where that person would have any authority to act until that trigger
until
is met.
Those. And you can have like one or two doctors or?
Yep. We used to, as we talked a little bit before the show, we used to see a lot more of two physician certifications. But again, nowadays with the reluctancy of physicians to be the one to say that.
Yeah.
And just again, from an ease of administration standpoint, we see much more of just the one, but it certainly could be two.
Now, so if you named, let's say there are two children locally that you just as soon have, back up a minute. Let's say I've named my spouse as the power of attorney. Do I simply then, within the document, name a successor power of attorney if she says, I don't want to do this either? She's not able to, for instance.
We're all about the if and or but scenarios.
Yes. Yeah.
So absolutely. If you're going through that effort to make sure that you're getting these documents in place, you always want to have a backup because, in the event that nothing happens, I will tell you a lot of people do their documents, put them away in the drawer and never look at them again.
Right.
So we want to make sure that we've always got an alternate on there.
Would you suggest, let's say there are two children, and that's where it's going to go. Would you generally recommend having both of them let's say I trust them both and I'd like them to both act. Is that possible?
They certainly could both act, and there are scenarios where we would have both of them acting. But again, I go back to using these in reality and really what's going to happen on a day-to-day basis. So when I do name both, and if they're both of the same skill set, they're both competent, you trust them, usually what I'll do is you could appoint them jointly and they would confer with each other, but that they would still retain the ability to act independently.
And once in a while, you're going to need to change an attorney, in fact, the person who's named there. How difficult is that to do?
Not at all. Again, just like you go through the process of doing your initial document, then you can come back in and redo that document. Again, with the caveat, as we talked about, as long as you're competent to do that.
Right, and this obviously then points up the fact that, my gosh, you got to really stay on top of this and have this reviewed because these things change. One son moves away and goes to Illinois, and he's not able to do this. Well, the daughter still here, for instance. Why not just put her on as the sole successor attorney, in fact? Is that the proper way to say that?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Yep. And to your point, absolutely to be reviewing those just like any of the other documents on a regular basis. Not only may the appointments change the individuals, there's also laws that change. The world changes around us, so making sure those documents are up to date.
So that really reminds me, because here we focus a lot on this show about beneficiary forms. Check your beneficiaries. We're always talking about that.
Yes.
Excuse me. And so this is another thing. Maybe if you're thinking, oh, I'm changing beneficiary forms, I should look at my POA as well. So every couple of years or with a life event, maybe?
Absolutely, yes. Yep. We always say at least a couple, 2-3 years, you should be pulling those back out and taking a look at them. Most people, again, you go through the process, they put them away, they don't want to think about it again. So then I say at least think about those life events, birth, death, divorce, marriage, those things in life that are big changes that then you need to go back and look at your documents and see how that affected them.
I mean, seriously, I'm thinking, honestly, as you're talking, we mentioned this too before the show, this has got to be a growth industry, but start making a better acquaintance with your attorney. There's all of these jokes about that. We get it. I get it. But this to me needs to be a more common occurrence where we're all reviewing this stuff with you guys, I'll just say it that way, so that we're staying up to date on this.
Absolutely. I would not disagree with you, Dennis.
Yeah, not one bit. So, now, Shea Stats, please.
All right, 75% of the semiconductor chips manufactured in the world today are made in Asia. 75%. Just 12% of all chips are made in the USA. And the source for that is the Semiconductor Industry Association. How would you like to be on that board?
Oi.
Oi. Just one out of every 11 employees, so 9%, who are auto-enrolled in their company's 401k plans opt out of their participation in the pre-tax retirement plan, and that's from Fidelity. So that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Only one out of every 11 opt out. And a lot of those auto-enroll plans are a great idea.
They are. Talk about left-handed. It's a way to save. Get started. Mm-hmm. You bet.
45% of American households surveyed in November of 2021 indicate that rising domestic inflation has caused them moderate or severe hardship. Mm-hmm. And that's from the Gallup. That inflation is a serious thing. Yeah. All right, so the title of this Shea Stat is Everybody is Paying Less, and I'm saying the title so that you can follow me along here in the numbers. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 was signed into law by President Trump on December 22, 2017, and became effective on January 1st of 2018. The tax cuts did not impact tax returns filed for tax year 2017. The average tax rate paid by the top 1% of taxpayers, so that's federal income tax paid divided by adjusted gross income, dropped from 26.76% in 2017 to 25.57% in 2019. The average tax rate paid by the bottom 90% of taxpayers dropped from 8.38% in 2017 to 7.36% in 2017, and that's from the IRS.
So about a 1% drop for both groups.
So they went
groups.
Down.
Yeah.
They went down.
All.
Here's another tax one. To rank in the top 1% of U.S. taxpayers for the 2019 tax year required adjusted gross income of at least $546,434. That highly paid group received 20.14% of all AGI that was reported nationwide, but they paid 38.77% of the federal income tax that was collected. And that's from the IRS. Do we want to do a little S&P one here, Dennis?
Sure.
The all-time closing high for the S&P 500 was 44,712 and was set on December 10th of 2021. The S&P 500 has set its closing high for the calendar year during December in 13 of the last 19 years, including December highs reached in 2019, 2020, and now 2021.
So December is a big month.
December tends to be a good month, obviously.
Hmm. That's great. That is wild stuff.
Thank you, Shay. Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff. So let's dive back into the questions with Courtney, specifically related to the dangers of powers of attorney. And we've probably seen some of the stories out there about potential abuse by the named attorney in fact. Tell us about that, if you would, Courtney.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we touched on the fact that we try to make these as comprehensive as possible to anticipate any and all scenario that somebody would need to be able to stand in your shoes. The flip side of that is they're comprehensive. You've just given somebody a lot of authority. And so, unfortunately, you do see some of that being abused by individuals, ill-intentioned individuals. So that goes back to, who are you appointing? Don't appoint someone just because they are a family member, just right. because they are a child. Make sure that not only do they have the skill set that's necessary, but obviously you trust them wholeheartedly to be acting in your best interest.
So it should be a careful and thoughtful decision.
Absolutely.
I love this point here. You must be absolutely certain the power will not be abused. So in essence, the onus is on the person having the durable power of attorney written.
Correct. Yep.
Yes.
Well, and on from my perspective as the attorney, that's part of my job, too, is to counsel you through those decisions. You know, I work with a lot of clients who, again, their gut reaction is to name a child or something
sure.
like that. And then we start going through, okay, what is the role of that individual and what are they going to have to do? And does this child really have the ability to do that, the skill set to do that? And if not, then let's, you know, find somebody who will and does.
Okay. Now, let's go, because you mentioned it, what are the roles of the attorney, in fact? What are some of the duties that they're going to have on the financial side?
Generally speaking, the overreaching authority is that they are under a fiduciary duty, right? So
yeah.
they are going to be acting in a fiduciary capacity. They are going to be accounting for everything. They are supposed to be accounting for everything that they are doing when they are doing it on your behalf. But again, generally speaking, what they're doing is acting in your best interests.
Yes, so, your very best interest. So that's the definition of a fiduciary. They are acting in your best interest. Okay.
So if you're acting as, like, you're the person doing it for your parent, you still want to keep great records, like keep all those receipts, keep all a record of all the things you did in their name, so, and communicate that so there's an open and honest discussion so those things don't bubble up. Right?
Absolutely. Transparency is key.
So let's say I'm one of three children, as a for instance. How often should I communicate, given that I'm named the power of attorney? How should I communicate that with my siblings about what's going on with, let's say it's mom?
I will tell you, the more communication and the more frequent the communication, the better. Whenever we have somebody, especially in a family scenario, there's unnecessary tension sometimes if
sure.
there is silence, radio right. silence, crickets. So the more open you can be with the lines of communication, the better.
So silence is not golden. Tell them,
no.
You know, we took an RMD for mom. She had to take it this year, else she would have a 50% penalty of that RMD. Here's another, for instance, to say it was, I don't know, $10,000. We gave 20% of that, or $2,000, to her church. Tell them all that, right?
Absolutely, because I can tell you on the flip side, I've seen where we are tracing all those funds and the questions are coming up to say, gosh, I saw this withdrawal. Where did that go? And as the attorney in fact, the one that is acting on behalf, keep those records, keep that so that you have no issue pulling that up immediately to show them exactly where that went.
Right, and then you don't have to rely on your memory. Oh, what did I do? If you just keep a record, keep a folder, then you don't have to do that because you have the records there.
Yep, so, absolutely.
Yeah. So it'd be very clear in the responsibility that you're going to have to keep records and you're going to need to communicate that with the others within the family about what's going on, what's coming out, what's going in these transactions, and especially any surprises, perhaps, even as well.
Yep, yep. And as you know, working with families, I work with families all the time.
Yeah.
And when we mix money in families, that's a whole nother show. But,
yes.
you know, again, communication is key, transparency is key.
Business and family is a new transaction for a lot of families. I saw that in my family. I mean, I'd never been involved with them on the, quote, business side. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, when we were settling the estate, it was an eye-opener on, I'll just say this, how differently that operation took, because there weren't just six of us. There were 12, in essence, because there were all the spouses involved, too.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. So bring that back to even now, you're talking on an estate settlement.
Sure.
Same thing goes on. Those same underlying currents are happening even during lifetime with a document such as the financial power of attorney.
And then a question with estates for you, Courtney. I know in my personal circumstance, my dad had a trust. And when he had health issues, we were really relieved when he was getting those health issues resolved to find that the power of attorney was already there in the trust, that we could use that and we didn't have to make an extra trip or contact an attorney. So is that something that is normally done when you set up a trust, or how does that work?
Yes, absolutely. My practice is whenever you're going through the process of estate planning, you're going to be getting in place your trust and your will, and then what I call those lifetime documents, the healthcare power of attorney and your financial power of attorney. Those should absolutely be a part of the entire package.
And there's two power of attorneys, the medical and the financial.
Correct.
Yes, and are we going to have time for the medical here, Ron? We probably are. Awesome. But before we go on, I was just thinking, if this were the case, you know, I've had this durable power of attorney done, and I've named two children. They're operating. They're doing just fine. What if I get better? You know, I fall and hit my head. I'm out of it for 6 weeks. Both of them are. Thank you for the clock there, Ron. what time is it anyway? Ever heard that song before? So what? What if I get better? Let's say I merge in and merge out of not well and better. Why does that work?
Yep. So if you take, for instance, a springing power of attorney, that's what's so important about what does that document say and how comprehensive. It should absolutely detail, number one, what's the mechanics for when you're triggered to be incapacitated, and then also the flip side, how do when you are no longer deemed incapacitated, that it removes that authority from that attorney, in fact, and gives that back to you.
How does someone contact you if they have questions in this nature? What's the best way to kind of get in touch with you, Courtney?
Sure, absolutely. My direct dial is 231-714-0163. Main office number, 231-714-0157.
0157. And you're also on the web, DAR. What is that
address? We are at www.darlawyers.com.
D-A-R. Lawyers.com.
You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
And I'm the other financial advisor, Heidi Thompson.
And I'm Shay Pataja. I put the fun in financial.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio on WTCM News Talk 580. That's Prout Financial Design. Mr. Dennis Prout in the house, along with Heidi Thompson, Shay Pataja, all from Prout Financial Design, and special guest today, Courtney Danbrook, talking about the durable powers of attorney.
Awesome. Thank you, Ron. So the how of the power of attorney, how does it work? How does someone get this document?
Well, of course, I'm going to say pick up the phone and call your attorney.
Yeah, sure.
Yes. And it's not, I tell you, it's painless. It's not hard to do. It's not something that you should feel overwhelmed at. Just keep in mind it's something that's extremely important. So for me, for my practice, it would be getting in contact with me. I would obviously walk through in more detail than we can today.
Sure.
What exactly it is. What is that document designed to do? Who do we want to appoint? Again, that counseling, going through how important those roles are, and then you know, getting that in place. And it's not something that takes a lot of time, not that expensive to do, but again, sort of invaluable.
You bet. So it might take what, 1 to 3 meetings or so generally to get this done?
Not even that. If we are just doing powers of attorney, not even that. And again, of course, if we're going to do powers of attorney, my next question is going to be, well, do you have the rest of your documents in place?
Yes.
Right.
So powers of attorney obviously have to come first, because we want to take care of those details if we should have a health issue or become disabled in some way. But then all the other comes in as well. So it's a great way to get a possible introduction with you and or another attorney in the area so they can become more familiar with what this looks like.
Absolutely. And I always say with people that are overwhelmed as far as the estate planning process, start with your powers of attorney at least at a minimum.
Yeah. And I would say from the financial side, please, please get this done. It is not easy to get this done after the fact. And, oh my gosh, given the level of responsibility, we all get that too. That's why people are trying to gain more information about how to handle their finances, because the shift of responsibility has gone as we've all used these 401ks to accumulate assets, IRAs, 403bs, all the rest, and then properties out of state too, right?
Yeah, it's that shift. It's also, we've seen an increase in how are we dealing with diminished capacity for people. And as you said, do it before it's too late. Right. We have to be competent in order to execute these. So plan ahead.
What happens, what is the scenario if mom or dad or spouse becomes incompetent without powers of attorney and the family now needs to conduct some affairs?
That is where we are going through the probate court to get the guardian or conservator appointed.
And what's the downside of that?
Just the process. You know, it's a process, and it takes a while.
Okay.
And, you know, usually in these scenarios, you're more likely in sort of a semi-emergency situation. And so having to go through the stress of the probate court process, it's much easier to have planned ahead, have these documents in place. Like I said, you have your healthcare power of attorney and your financial power of attorney, and you avoid having to go to through that process whatsoever.
Now, I don't mind meeting new people, but that's a situation I don't want to, obviously, right?
Right. Seriously. And I would just emphasize, too, we talked about health, and it's important for your health or if you're disabled, but there's other practical considerations that we had talked about, like you mentioned if you're traveling and you're unreachable. Maybe you're climbing Mount Everest or something like that.
Yep.
Or it even could be a child, an adult child. Maybe that's off at school. Maybe they're taking a semester overseas or something. But someone to take care of issues if something came up with income tax or, you know, financially, having that in place can be helpful, correct?
Exactly. We always talk about these big issues, but it's very simple things, too, just like that. Quite frequently, think about sometimes, a lot of times, a real estate closing or something like that, and having that power of attorney in place. If you can't physically be there, you've given somebody else the authority to be doing that, too.
Mm. All right. Powers of attorney for health care. What's that all about, and when should we want to think? Did I see a hand over there in the corner, too?
I'm sorry. I'm just getting a text here to remind our listeners, too, at Prout, we are limited on what we can help people with if they don't have an assigned POA.
We are.
And that's something that's very important to remind and explain to our audience.
So you need your RMD or you need some money into your bank account. Often you've pre-authorized these documents. This doesn't always happen. But if you haven't and you have a specific financial situation that needs to be addressed, and Johnny is here in Traverse City, and as Heidi said, you're on Mount Everest. It's kind of cold up there, Heidi, by the way.
I was trying to think of an extreme example. Yeah.
But let's say you are. He or she will want to be able to do that for you. That seems like an obvious thing. If you're going to travel, get the power of attorney done. Yeah.
So we have a text question. It says, what if you don't have an attorney? I don't know if that's, powers of attorney doesn't mean you have to have an attorney. But to get the papers written up, you need an attorney like Courtney.
Correct. Yep. Yeah, we think of, actually, I'll tell the joke that my dad's power of attorney for my mom, and he read the first line and says that he's her attorney in fact. And he said, well, I'm an attorney now. So, there's a little difference between an attorney and an attorney in fact. They sound similar. But, absolutely, an attorney, whether it's myself or someone else who specializes in estate planning, would be able to help you out.
You bet. Now, let's say we're changing the subject to a power of attorney for health care. When would that come into use?
again, just like financial and business, there are those scenarios where unfortunately we would not be able to make our own medical decisions. And again, we take that for granted. In Michigan, obviously you have to be incompetent to not be able to make your own medical decisions before that would come into play. But having somebody that you have selected who you know will be good in that role to make those in those scenarios, as well as communicate your specific wishes related to that.
Okay, so for care, whether you want to move facilities, what are some of the issues or situations you've seen related to this document and how it's used?
Sure. So when we're doing a comprehensive healthcare power of attorney, we've got all of that authority that you just touched on a little bit. Things that, again, we take for granted, healthcare related, changing facilities, hiring and firing medical personnel, arranging for spiritual care, all of those things, coupled with then sort of the medical directive portion of it, which is your specific wishes with respect to life-sustaining treatment, artificial nutrition, hydration, all of those things, again, as we say, nobody wants to talk about, but how important it is to communicate that to others while you can so that they carry out those wishes.
So now Munson has their five wishes, but your durable power of attorney sounds like it would go much into more in depth if they wanted to in terms of medical directives.
Yeah, absolutely. I always say at a minimum, Munson does a great job of everybody that comes through their door, give them, it used to be five wishes, now it's their medical directive, but those terms are interchangeable, and at least at a minimum getting that form document filled out so you've appointed somebody. What we do then is something a little more comprehensive than that, but that is absolutely a great thing to have in place at a minimum.
Do you get couples, spouses in together to get power of attorney for each other frequently?
Yes.
Same time?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And then we always have the joke of, well, can my spouse, if I'm just sleeping, can they just pull the plug on me? No, it doesn't work that way. Yeah.
Still have that fiduciary responsibility.
We always, right before execution, after we've gone through the drafts, I always look at the spouses and say, okay, now are you sure that you guys are willing to serve for each other or that you trust each other to do that?
Yes. I took a nap and she sold the house.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, it obviously it has to be used, or it's going to be used generally in applicable or appropriate cases. But if it's not, then you get to go through that as well with clients. Do we have time here to talk about that? Yes. How do we do that? How do we deal with someone who's abusing their rights as the attorney in fact?
Well, yeah, and unfortunately, you'll see that more in the financial realm. Money motivates people, unfortunately.
Sure.
There's greed involved. So when that is identified, then obviously you're going through the legal process of, you know, if the individual who appointed that person is incapacitated, we're going to go through the legal process on their behalf to get that person removed, try to recoup funds, and it's... Yes.
So
you
going
can imagine
through
messy.
Yeah, the court process, especially within a family, that would be extremely difficult, and hopefully never. But that's when you're talking to the parents, in essence, seriously about who's trustworthy within the family, and obviously, hopefully, that's a good decision.
Yep.
But there are some risks with these documents, as there are in any documents. So it's great to keep it updated.
Yes. Yep.
And be true to thyself in terms of how those children or who is serving as the attorney, in fact, are doing too.
Yeah, it's hard to sometimes take that emotional piece out of it. But again, that's part of my job is let's really walk through what, as we talked about, the role that that child is going to serve. Are they equipped to do that? More so, you see it on the healthcare side too, where somebody with a certain type of personality, a certain type of knowledge is better in those situations than somebody who's very, very emotionally attached.
Yes.
So
your phone number again, if you would, Courtney.
Sure, 231-714-0157.
Awesome. Thank you, Courtney.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
Appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.